Yes, the problem child. Okay. I want to thank Sunny and the USDA people for inviting me to speak. I'm just going to tell a little story about Sprouts, but I'm going to start with an introduction to who we are and what we're doing at FDA. So I'm from CIFSAN, which is Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition, which is part of FDA, and I'm really from our research group. So we have a lot of really exciting projects. One of them is Yuma right now. We're trying to get a longitudinal study going on there, and I actually just got back from Yuma taking a bunch of water samples a week or two ago. If I have time, I can tell you a little bit about that. But basically, we're using next-generation sequencing tools to address all of these questions at these intersects, you know, the ecology of pathogenicity, the salmonellas, the E. coli's. They don't just, you know, come on their own there. They come as part of a complex ecology. And even the ecology of nutrition, you know, not just food safety questions, but food quality questions are something that we're addressing with our next generation sequencing technologies. And then just how this all plays into the ecology of human health. So some of you may be familiar with our genome tracker program. This is just a simplified concept to make this really accessible. What we've been doing is sequencing the entire genome of all of the most common foodborne pathogens. And really just by getting all the information that we possibly can, like as many of those 5 million bases or close to 5 million for Salmonella, for example, we can use that with the databases that we generate to cluster closely related ones. That means we can source track with really, really high precision pretty much any Salmonella, Listeria, E. coli that we come across these days. So we can tell you exactly where it came from. So that's scary for industry, but I think it's actually a really exciting opportunity for people that work with industry to sort of, you know, get those tools honed in-house in industry and then use all the public tools that we made available to identify in your own production environment, like is it the ingredients, whatever it might be that got the contamination into your product. So I'm mentioning the Genome Tracker CP. We have a lot of tracker programs now because we're just using this technology for all kinds of identification because this is sort of a plant meeting. I wanted to at least mention our Genome Tracker CP, which is just using, a lot of people are going to full chloroplasts of plants to distinguish between plants, and this works really nicely. And the concept is exactly the same, just getting all the information you possibly can about the chloroplasts and using that to cluster related things. And if you have nice databases, you can track very efficiently. And we use this for dietary supplements, adulteration of products like that. We did a test case with Echinacea, which is very closely related, and we were able to pull them all apart. So that was useful. And then we actually do a microbiome study of that as well, but I'm not going to talk about that. And so getting into the tools we're using to look at the Sprouts question, the program I lead is the metagenomics program. And we're even creating a metagenome tracker so that we can type ecologies. And this can be used for source tracking initiatives, but also for, this is just a slide of some of the trackers. We need to create these high resolution databases for plants, for insects. We're using mitochondria so we can tell you, you know, what insects were in your flour or whatever the product is, your cereal. Maybe they brought the bacterial pathogens in. Anyway, but we're using this to characterize certainly risk and just the entire farm-to-fork continuum, focusing especially on risk, you know, for the food safety issues. Which part of the agricultural environment, which part of the farm-to-fork continuum played a role in getting that pathogen to the product? So that involves characterizing the baselines of these crops, you know, maybe just the actual anatomical microbial ecology of a crop. This was one of our first papers addressing this topic for tomatoes and looking at tomatoes in different biogeographic areas and just trying to understand. We don't have these baselines yet. So as we develop them, it's going to really help us fine-tune risk mitigation, spoilage. You know, so these are the things we're using it for. So that's the introduction. Those are our tools. That's our research unit. That's our focus. And then we wanted to help this Sprouts farmer, Bob Sanderson. So we partner with industry as much as we can. We are the research group, so we have a little bit more leeway to do this than other elements of FDA. But this Sprouts grower, Bob Sanderson, he is a scientist in his own right, and he's been looking at his operation for a long time, really frustrated. You know, Sprouts are in a place, there have been so many outbreaks that big companies have dropped them. You know, I mean, Walmart doesn't even carry them. So it's like, is this industry going to fail? Can he come up with something? So he's been sort of doing the science on his own, and he wanted us to help him back this up with the kind of ecological profiles that we can do. And so the concept is, the experimental design is, you've got, you're starting water. A Sprouts crop takes about 4 days to be ready. And you start with your water. And what we did was test the irrigation water every day of this growing. And what he'd been doing is using these 3M Petri films to sort of assess colony forming units, total coliforms, fecal indicators. You know, these methods are evolving for sure, but he had been using this and noticing that when, by the end of his sprout water growing, he was seeing less of the E. coli species or the fecal indicators or the gram negatives, whatever these 3M Petri films actually grow, which I have my questions about, but this is what is used in a lot of cases. And so that was an interesting observation that he wanted to look deeper into, because ultimately the more biocontrols we can identify, you know, the safer management techniques that we can employ are incredibly important, you know, in this field. So to address that, we took sprouts from a first water, the very first water that he got out of the tap, and then the 4 days of growing it. And we just characterized all the bacteria, and here's where, like, Pandora's box comes into play. You know, we arrive at these gigantic data sets that are really complex. If you tried to share this with the public, it would be overwhelming. If you try to share it with the growers, it's overwhelming. It's even overwhelming to the scientists, like, how to use this to actually manage this problem and learn from it and do something useful for this crop. So, in fact, you do see, like, that black bar is, that black area, you can see the E. coli. So he was correct. The relative abundance of that E. coli did diminish by the end. But what does that mean? You know, were one of these other bacterial members playing some kind of suppressive role? And then he also had this concept that if he took water from the beginning, like these first four days, and used it successively, and this is weeks later, he would get an even bigger suppressive effect. And so it does look like that's true. But, you know, does that mean the crop is safer? So we also looked at low abundant, I'm not going to talk about that one, but we also looked at the fungi that were present. And so you start to see other parts of the story. Maybe it's just these fungi are getting more abundant in this water environment and they're eating the bacteria. And then we looked at the protists that are in this environment, and you're seeing this huge increase in several of these protist species. And so maybe they're eating the bacteria. And protists are also, known to sometimes harbor some of our pathogens, you know, so it kind of creates this Trojan horse that, so we have so much data, and how can we use this to help, this crop? But it's a very interesting, but we have to start somewhere. And this is really like an extensive survey, but I'm not sure that we have the answers yet. He sort of like wandered away like so confused and not exactly knowing what to do with this. So just in the water DNA extractions we did, I wanted to point out that it got really difficult by day 4, even though the water was cleaner, to get it through the filter. And I'm thinking that was largely because of this huge abundance in the protists that were starting to grow. That may have been the ones eating the bacteria. So anyway, here we are. It's like trying to explain this to the public. It's too much information. It's confusing to scientists. How do we trust the data? How do we trust the annotation? There's so many questions here, but it is the beginning, you know, and we will find answers. So, I'm not going to... One thing we do typically is when we... That gray area on the top has all this diversity that if I tried to show that on a slide, it would be, you know, not readable. So we kind of put anything less than 1% into a gray or anything less than 3 or 5 or whatever is relevant for what we're looking at. And sometimes that area has the highest metabolic activity if you're actually looking at the RNA or the transcriptome of that community. So that's also an interesting concept. And I wanted to just make this really brief point. Like, I just attended this soil pollution symposium at FAO in Rome, and it was fantastic. But it was heartbreaking to have an understanding of the chemical contaminants that we're also putting on our crops. And so everything we do is really interconnected, and everything you guys are doing, all of these things that seem so tiny focused are actually hugely important to our own public health. Because everything we do to our food, we're essentially doing to ourselves, you know, even the chlorine. Because ultimately, and this is sort of getting into the whole microbiome background, we are more microbial than we are human by cell count. So every single thing that we're putting on these products to protect them is having that same effect in our own microbiome. And so think about that when you start thinking about how we're managing our food, what is in our food, the food matrix itself. And then think of that in relation to public health issues right now, where we've gotten ahead of a lot of acute diseases by, you know, using antibiotics, vaccines, but we're in a time where we have all these chronic diseases on the rise, you know, and I think a lot of that can be traced to our food and the way we handle it. All of these diseases here have been associated with dysbiotic microbiota, human. So has anyone seen this movie, Idiocracy? No? Oh my God, it's so funny. So anyway, this guy, Luke Wilson goes to sleep, or he gets put in some kind of experiment by the army. He wakes up 500 years later and everybody's gotten so dumb because like only people that like were really dumb kept making children. So like America doesn't even know how to manage its crops anymore. And they're spraying it with this energy drink that's just taken over the market called Brondo. And like Brondo has bought the FDA, the USDA, everything's Brondo. And he's like, what do you mean? So he's been brought out to try and figure out why the crops aren't growing. And so he's like, is this an energy drink they're spraying on the crops? They're watering their crops with an energy drink? And so I think like that's sort of, it's really funny. It's a crazy movie, but it actually has this really interesting parallel. And I used this when I was talking about the impact of methyl bromide on soil we were looking at and we presented in Rome. And it's like, wait, you mean we're using a broad spectrum biocide on every single thing we grow? And just like having a better understanding of all the residues and all the components of the chemistry of our products and how they reach us. At a conference in Mexico recently, they told me there were 3 different groups of produce, some that went to America, that just had to be free of biologics but could be loaded with chemicals. Some that went to Europe that could not have any chemicals because they test so carefully. And then whatever they gave to their own people. And I just thought that was pretty interesting. And think about that as you think about, you know, our own microbial food pyramid and then our own microbial selves. So I think, like... This is just a colleague of mine that I worked with for a long time who studied medicinal plants, and he used to also use that concept. Like, these exciting things that exist in these low abundant places have these keystone effects in things that we don't even know we don't know yet. So I really liked your slide. And Dr. Duke, a long-term mentor of mine, you know, used to always go into his backyard and be like, if I can walk into my well-studied backyard that only has 4 to 6 woody species per hectare, and find 3 plants that have been billion-dollar drugs and saved millions of lives, what are we missing when we destroy the rainforest that has 300 woody species per hectare? And you can apply the same concept to our soils, to the microbial ecology of our crops, and you know, and just how we... And so every single thing that everyone in this room is doing is so much more important than perhaps you realize, or maybe you already realize that, but more important than some of the public may realize. Anyway, so that's what we do, and these are some of the people that have been huge helps to me. at FDA. So thank you so much.